Hi, this is Sylvan. Paying salaries is fairly easy until it becomes complicated. The examples are numerous. An employee gets pregnant or is off to civil service or is taxed at source. If you take care of employee administration yourself, you have to read up on all these cases first, and a typical trustee means a lot of communication and billed hours. Alternatively, you can rely on Quit Business. This ETH spin-off not only supports but also takes over the entire administration of employees for startups. From the registration with the authorities to the selection of insurances to managing the entire payroll accounting. All you need to get started are a few mouse clicks. Simple, efficient, and error-free. Visit quit.business and get the service 1 year free with the code Swisspreneur. That's quit.business.
Sales is such a fundamental skill. And I think oftentimes when people say sales, they think of like your cliche, like
the insurance guy.
Or whatever, right? Just like the, like on the bazaar or whatever. But like sales is a highly intricate, and like hiring is sales, fundraising is sales, selling is sales.
Yeah.
Even building a product and leading a team and motivating a team and making sure they buy into the mission and the vision.
Welcome to the Swisspreneur Show, a podcast about startup stories and learnings from experienced entrepreneurs. Here's your host, Sylvan.
Janai, a very well welcome to the Swisspreneur Show. Thank you so much for traveling from the US to our studio today.
Thanks for having me.
You're the co-founder and CEO at Ren, the intelligence tool that alerts you of actionable news about clients, prospects, and key contacts, and helps you reach out in a timely and meaningful way. Before we talk about your company and what you actually do with Ren, I want to start with your studies. You studied electrical and industrial engineering here in Zurich at the ETH. When you finished your master's, what were your career goals back then?
Career goals. I don't think I've ever been a person with like very set career goals and like a clear outline of what I want to do. But the main things were, I was very curious. I was very hungry. Mm-hmm. So basically anything that would satisfy that. During my studies, sort of in parallel, I was also part of this group called ETH Juniors, which is just trying to do entrepreneurial stuff like while they're studying, I guess, to expand their horizon a little bit. That was a lot of fun. And I learned a lot during that time. Mm-hmm. So I think I always knew that I wanted to experience that more, right? Just learn a ton, work with great, ambitious, very hungry people. But again, I didn't have any sort of specific set goals or like, I'm going to be a doctor or I'm going to be a lawyer.
Right. But was entrepreneurship on the map as a career choice for you when you were still studying?
Yeah, but I think that came later, just okay. In the sense that the understanding of, I mean, I guess like just a little bit more of how the world works, mm-hmm. how like you look outside and there's a ton of problems and just pick one and go solve it, right? And then there's a lot of ways to solve it, right? You can go join a team that's already on a mission to solve something that you care about and that you're curious about. Mm-hmm. And if you don't find it, or if you have a specific new way in which you want to solve that problem, well, go start a business, right? So I think the understanding of that came late in the, during my studies. Mm-hmm. And then I started to dig into that a little bit more.
You then actually joined a startup company. You joined the data intelligence company, Teralytics. You joined them for 5 years before you then decided to start your own company. What made you join a startup in the first place?
Yeah, so back then, big data was the hot thing. Mm-hmm. And also two of my friends from ETH, juniors actually, and ETH, they had started this business alongside a professor at ETH. Mm-hmm. I always admired them from a distance. And sort of like, it goes back to what I just said, right? They were on a mission that I really liked. There were people that I really liked. I didn't have a better idea on how to solve the thing that they were trying to solve. So we chatted about it. We already trusted each other and knew each other and we liked each other. So it was like, hey, let's just team up and do this together. I was also during that time sort of studying abroad. So I had worked on getting them a few leads just as a friendly favor. Like, hey, I talked to this person. They're digging into your space. Why don't you guys chat? So I believe I had already sort of given them a little bit of an ROI before I'd even started. So they got excited and I was excited. So we just kicked that off together. Yeah, that was the origin story of that.
And then after 5 years, you decided to sort of leave that startup, Teralytics, and start your own company with Ren. Yeah. What made you then do that step? Because that's still quite a bit of a different game, right? Working for someone else versus really starting your own company from scratch.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, in both cases, I guess it was unique in the sense that I joined and worked for other folks, other founders, yes, but also I had joined before they were even 10 people, I think. Yeah. So it's this like this early employee gig, which tends to be kind of short-lived, right? Depending on how it's going. Mm-hmm. So 5 years at a startup is actually considered rather long. And obviously at the end of those 5 years, I was in a completely different job and country and continent than where I had started, which, I guess is typical for a wild ride like that. But at that point, I had seen different cycles, like different stages of the company. Mm-hmm. And after a certain time, once you've done a couple of different sort of held a couple of different positions, I guess it was time to do something new. And it wasn't even really, I want to leave in order to start Ren. It was just, hey, it's time. I'm going to get married. I'm going to travel the world. And then I'm going to start thinking about what I might want to do next. Mm-hmm. And that sort of like the Ren thing evolved kind of serendipitously.
You said at the beginning that you were always ambitious. You really wanted to chase these big goals. And is that something that was just in you, or did you also have any role models that inspired you to become an entrepreneur or served as a role model as entrepreneurs themselves to then start your own company? Did you have any of that sort, or where would your entrepreneurial drive come from if you had to name one or two sources?
Yeah, I mean, that's a different question. I think there's two questions. Where does that drive come from, or did I have any role models? I don't know if I had role models. I mean, of course, like with Teralytics, I was close to two brilliant founders that I really enjoyed. So definitely learned a lot there. But in terms of just like I also wouldn't say I had really big goals in that sense. I just had a drive and curiosity. Again, I'm mostly driven by curiosity. And where does that come from? I don't know, probably from my mom's womb or something. I mean, we had a pretty tricky journey coming to Switzerland, right? Which was sort of like my parents fled a different country. So they were refugee immigrants. I was born in a refugee camp, actually. And we arrived in Switzerland. Obviously, I don't remember any of that stuff, but probably just sort of that upbringing with very little and the upbringing in a foreign place and just having to navigate stuff. And I don't know, might be from there, but I was not really chasing goals or sort of clear role models at all, actually, just following my curiosity.
Right. I think that's a good guiding light.
Yeah, I think so.
So then in 2019, you founded Ren. And the first question that naturally arises is, where have you met your co-founders and what makes a good team?
Yeah, so Ren is not your standard like two founders in a garage kind of story, right? I'm not the founder in that sense that I was sitting there and then I came up with an idea. It was actually, in a funny way, the founding of Ren was very Ren in the sense that... so I had decided to move on from Teralytics. I had decided it's time for something new and I was going to go travel and go on my long honeymoon and so forth to just also wind down after 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. 5 years of a race is, as somebody who's built stuff, can be quite taxing. So I had, before I left New York to go on my long trip, I had pinged a couple of friends of mine just saying, hey, leaving for a few months, I'll be back. And when I'm back, I'd like to talk about just spitball some ideas, right, Brainstorm a few things, spar with you. One of the guys that I'd hit up, actually one of the few people that I'd hit up, Matt, my friend, who runs a very successful cybersecurity company, it was just a one-line email back that said, before you leave, you got to meet my friend Mike. And that was Mike Hayes, who's now obviously one of the originators who had been thinking about this problem, who had this problem himself that we're now working on solving. So it was this very lucky, random, serendipitous just connection through a mutual connection that put me in the room with some very interesting people. And then we just started talking about what this is that they were thinking about, which of course back then might have looked and sounded very different than what we ended up building. But the core mission and vision, which was all part of that group, which I have now both joined and I would say also shaped to some degree, is very much still alive, which is exactly that sort of like making that what happened to me, right, which is becoming CEO of Ren, making that happen for more people, more systematically, right? Making people more lucky in that sense.
Right. Yeah. And that was before you then went on the honeymoon trip that you met Mike.
Yeah, it was very shortly before, actually. And it was funny, actually. It was kind of this getting to know each other phase while at the same time, like our first stop was actually being on a safari in South Africa. It was a very just surreal period of time. I had met Mike, we chatted. He had introduced me to more folks like Frank, who's also one of the originators and one of the first investors, and then the Matt and John, who are brothers, sort of big in finance. Mm-hmm. So these are all just titans of industry and finance and sort of government and military. And here they are sitting down with good old me, like absolute nobody coming from the dirt. That was really exciting to me. Again, sort of my curiosity was piqued. Mm-hmm. Sort of after chatting for a few weeks back and forth and also vetting the idea, vetting the process, talking to a lot of people, seeing if there's something here, right? Mm-hmm. Like at first testing, is there a market for this? Does this already right. exist and so forth? In yeah. what form? And then once we built up enough conviction that, you know what, there's something here and we could do this, mm-hmm. We incorporated and kicked it off.
Right. And I imagine you mentioned that twice already, the honeymoon, mm-hmm. that this trip also seems from the outside to be a bit of a pivotal moment to say, hey, you had time to think, you were not working, you were traveling, and something happened there that you then came back and said, I'm going to start my own business. Is that true from this outside perspective that this honeymoon phase of, you know, having a break, having time to think yeah. also played an important role to then say, hey, this is what I want to do?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's no doubt that taking a step back provides new perspective, right? And that definitely did happen to me. I was definitely not open to doing something new while I was in the thick of it. Yeah. When you're in the daily grind, which I am now again, right? But when you're in the daily grind, you just function, right? There's sure. the mission. It's very clear. And you try to make it very clear, right? You want to be as simple and clear and sort of course, there's the daily tactical stuff. But very simple. Like this has been done before, right? There's, right, step one, understand the problem. Step two, understand who has the problem. Mm-hmm. Step three, okay, product market fit, like build the solution that could actually solve the problem. Step four, like try to distribute. So like it's pretty straightforward, but like the taking a step back also in my day-to-day is really important to just like from time to time lift your head up and don't forget that there's a horizon and make sure, sure. you're still steering towards the right target. In terms of starting Ren, I mean, it was definitely part of it. I mean, obviously the biggest news of that was like getting married to a phenomenal person. But yeah, no, and I also spoke with my now wife about this a lot, and there was a very, very intimate like discussion. I wasn't planning to join or start a new business at all, actually. Funny enough, I was thinking, I kind of have seen the startup thing. Like I've done the startup thing. So in some odd way, joining a massive corporation would have been newer in that sense, or it would have maybe even satisfied a different part of my curiosity. But this was this very special constellation of really unique individuals that really like pulled me that was really attractive to me to work with these people, to get close to those people, to understand how can I build something that works for this kind of demanding user at first, and then of course build a business out of it.
And you also mentioned serendipity that you just described also in your LinkedIn bio. You say serendipity equals right people plus the right time plus the right context. So we heard about the right people, how you met them. Why was the time right in 2019?
I don't know why it was right. There were a number of different elements, which of course had to do with my previous job, which is I had done a number of cycles, I had seen a number of stages, I had gone through a number of different positions, like from technical to technical leadership to opening up a new office in New York City in the US and exploring a new market, and then sort of running marketing for the company as a whole. After a while, again, the sort of like the curiosity thing just took over, and the number of new things seen and new things learned. It was a very nice time, to be honest. It wasn't super easy to step away from that. I mean, sure. It's an awesome team still. I still had a lot of influence, and yeah, but again, just the curiosity took over.
Got it. And then at its core, Ren is a sales tool from our perspective. But you've never worked at sales yourself. So how do you then better understand the problem to also build a product around that that problem that you solve?
At the core, I believe I am a salesperson.
Okay. I have to be now,
yeah,
at least.
And I'm pretty sure you are as well. I think sales is such a fundamental skill. And I think oftentimes when people say sales, they think of like your cliche, like...
the insurance guy.
Yeah, yeah, or whatever, right? Just like on the bazaar or whatever. But like sales is a highly intricate... And like hiring is sales, fundraising is sales, anything. Selling is sales.
Yeah.
Even building a product and leading a team and motivating a team and making sure they buy into the mission and the vision.
Right.
I mean, there's a reason why it's called buy into something, right? Because somebody's selling it. So in the sense of... regarding Ren being a sales tool, Ren is being used by relationship-based sales professionals. Yes. Mm-hmm. I would say sort of at its core, our mission is to make people luckier, to make people more, or to expose them to more of those serendipitous moments, to expose them to more of those times when the right people come together in the right time, they talk about the right context, and boom, magic happens, right? Mm-hmm. And it just so happens that deal makers and sales professionals, they understand very well what that means, right? Luck or serendipity always plays a massive role mm-hmm. in the entire sales process, right?
Yeah.
So it just turned out that way. Like we started building this for very senior leaders of companies, of groups and so forth. Yeah. And over time, we learned that the biggest opportunity for us, the chunkiest market share for us is for relationship-based sales professionals. So whenever something that your product or your service is something really expensive, humans tend to be part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Ren shines. It helps you strengthen your relationships. It helps you learn about important moments in the lives of the people you interact with, your colleagues, your friends, and your prospects and your clients. And that's a really useful tool when you're looking to land a deal.
That sounds amazing. And how do you actually do that? How do you make that happen? That if I try to have relationship nurtured, does Ren help me?
Yeah, sure. First of all, we'll put you on Ren so you can play around with it.
Perfect.
So every time I speak with someone super successful, including the sort of origin team of Ren,
mm-hmm.
But it feels like everybody breaks down luck in the same way. So oftentimes they'll say, they consider themselves very lucky. I consider myself the luckiest guy that I know, right?
Right.
I mean, born in a refugee camp, now get to do this. It's very, very hard to grasp how this happened. But the way this happened is I was lucky, but luck isn't just linear, right? It's not just every 4 seconds you have an increment of luck. That's just not how it works. It feels random. It's like much more like step functions, randomly distributed across a timeline.
Mm-hmm.
So you have time passes and then something happens and boom, your life takes on a different trajectory.
Right.
And very often, every time these things happen, the three common denominators tend to be the right people, the right time, and the right context. So once you break down luck in that way, you have three areas that you can augment with technology, right? So the right people, that's kind of like a database play, right? Where are the right people? Where is your universe of opportunity? Typically, it's a mess. It's on CRMs, it's on multiple devices, multiple email accounts. You're on Outlook, Google, whatever, you have an iPhone or two. And like, it's basically just information stored about a bunch of people. Now, of course, those aren't necessarily like your relationships and not all of them are equal, right? There might be some more relevant for some things, more relevant for other things. But that's understanding data and mm-hmm. processing data. So that's step one, right? Right,
sure.
People, that's that. So Ren is an integration play. It integrates into everything that you have. It pulls in all, or it understands what is your universe of opportunity. It's pretty good at prioritizing certain individuals over others, depending on your goals. So if you're selling to the C-suite, okay, so job title will tell us something about the relevance
sure.
of people.
Does that mean email accounts? Obviously, because you mentioned Google, Outlook, but do you also integrate with like LinkedIn, for example, to have the data sources?
Okay. LinkedIn, Salesforce, HubSpot, Outlook, Google.
Everything you use, basically.
Exactly. Everything you use where there's information about people that might potentially matter to you, right?
Got it.
So that's step one. And then step two is the right time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to figure out the right time to connect with someone, the right time to reach out to someone, that means you have to read everything. You have to monitor the entire world, basically, the entire internet, all the media. And that's basically, again, this stream of information. So we've partnered with media organizations, both aggregators and direct sources. Every day we're expanding the amount of media that we consume.
Mm-hmm.
So what we basically do is we read all the news for our users, all of the news. We have the broadest media coverage in the English-speaking market. We read everything every couple of hours. It's millions of articles every couple of hours. but not for stuff that the user, you, might be interested in, but what your prospect or clients might be interested in. So for example, if your prospect is mentioned in the news, if their company just went through a merger and acquisition, if somebody got promoted or changed their jobs, all of those things, also negative news, right? So like somebody's company got sued, somebody just announced layoffs, right? So basically any signal that is important for you to know about the relevant people in your life, and that might potentially trigger you to reach out or share, right? That's what we've built. And that then comes the context, right? So once we found something and we said, hey, your prospect was just mentioned in the news. It sounds like they're going through a very difficult period of time, but they've also just released a new product. Well, that's important information for you to know. You could reach out and be like, hey, I heard this is going on. Would love to support you guys. Here's how I could support you guys. And the, in terms of context, well, now everybody's seen it. We've been working with these models for the better part of like the last 3 years. We actually help you write that message in a very contextual, timely, and personalized way. And all of that takes just a couple of seconds.
That sounds amazing.
That tends to be valuable for people.
Absolutely.
Especially busy people. Yeah.
And what role does AI play in all of this? Because that seems to be a very crucial part of your product.
Yeah. I mean, AI is obviously the hype right now, right? We started this 3 years ago. And again, back then already, we were looking at all the first language models and so forth. I knew that, or we all, like me and my co-founder, Lionel, we also knew that if we're going to talk about context, we need to dig deep into natural language processing, right? Which wasn't even really possible before 2018, I would say, in this way in which we're doing it. So it is built with sort of fairly recent technology. So there's three areas where we use AI. One, we're building a giant noise filter, right? So something that reads everything and just gives you a signal about prospects and clients. So finding the information is step one. So that there's like finding the right words, finding the right entities, named entity recognition would be a key word there. But also finding sort of stuff beyond just keywords, right? There might be news that impact a person or a company you care about, but doesn't mention either, right? Might be a big industry event or something like that, that just impacts them. So that's turns out is a very tough problem. And we hired PhDs from ETH Zurich in quantum physics to actually solve this problem. It's a relatively tricky problem to solve. Then comes the understanding, or let's say like the summarizing of what happened and telling you how it impacts the person, because Ren doesn't just find you the article and now you still have to read it. It actually gives you a three-line summary and explanation of how it impacts the person. So you understand the context very fast, right? And then comes the generation, which, I mean, as of recent with ChatGPT and so forth, you've seen how good these things really are. So based on the input that we find, based on the signal that we find, then we let the user reach out to, and then you have a couple of options, right? You can reach out to say congrats, you can reach out to offer support, you can reach out to say, let's catch up. So those are some of those options.
And are there any parts where you say, hey, AI will never be capable of doing that, or that's where you still need this human touch or the human input to make it work?
Yeah. I mean, one of our users actually, sort of very influential guy, Jeff Eggers, he said it best, I think, and we posted this on LinkedIn too, so you can look that up. He said something along the lines of, and I'm paraphrasing here, one of the best use cases of AI is something that AI will never replace. It's helping you strengthen human relationships, right? Like, yes, AI can do a lot of stuff for you, And we haven't even seen, like, we haven't seen anything yet, right? This is going to become very crazy, I think. But ultimately, like this, right, sitting together, I'm looking into your eyes and we're building a relationship. This is brand new, right? We talked on the phone earlier, but this is the first time we meet. And I'm hoping this will turn into actually a cool relationship where we can help each other and who knows, right? I think I would feel very weird if I knew you were a robot.
Sure. Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe one day we won't, but I think for now there's still value in the human portion of human relationships. Right? So good luck to AI replacing that.
Sounds difficult.
Yeah.
So, but still, data is a very important point. It also increases the chance of success if you leverage that data and have the right context and then also the right timing. Can you quantify that? You know, I guess your customers will probably come to and ask, hey, sounds all great, but what's the business case behind it? Why should I give you money that you solve this for me?
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way to think about it this way, take a sort of deal maker, high level deal maker, right? In pick any industry, right? Commercial real estate or executive search, right? So what you're selling tends to be very expensive. Your commission tends to be relatively high. So oftentimes what our customers will do is the calculation, well, Ren exposes me to more opportunities, right? It uncovers stuff that allows me to reach out, start a conversation, and who knows, maybe I can help them do something. Maybe I can help them find a new building, find a new executive, or like maybe I can help them manage their wealth, right? Depending on what it is that your goal is. And then the calculation is relatively simple. One additional deal means 50,000, 100,000, whatever your commission is. Mm-hmm. And then you calculate it back from the price of what Ren is per year. And then you ask yourself the question, how much do I believe that Ren will find me one additional deal per year? And people seem to very easily convince themselves that, Ren can do that, let alone like once a quarter, once a month, and so forth.
Sure.
People are landing more meetings. They're getting more responses. They're uncovering more opportunities. People have already closed deals that they can trace back to Ren and say, I would have never closed this thing if it wasn't for Ren. I would have never read the news. I would have never thought of the person. And that's the magic of, what that sort of systematizing serendipity does, right? It makes you more lucky. It makes you land more deals.
Got it. And how does your pricing work? What's your business model?
So we're still early stage, right? So this is an ever-evolving topic. And I think even from what I've learned around pricing is that regardless of your stage, it should never be a done thing. So you're constantly developing pricing strategies. So for now, we've been focused on B2B. So our customers are companies who purchase user licenses for their deal makers, sales professionals, executives. And that is basically we chat. It's custom priced based on what they need, the volume of, seats that they need and so forth. So it ranges. What we've learned is, especially in some of those areas such as real estate or financial advisors, oftentimes the model will be different and we need to build an individual subscription package as well, which we are now getting to. And we're still thinking about this, but it needs to be very digestible. It needs to be a very sort of straightforward type of price. So we don't, we haven't sort of published it yet, but it's going to come in the next, I would say 4 to 6 weeks or so. We should have something out so that everybody individually even can come, buy it, subscribe it, and so forth.
Cool. I'm interested.
Good. We'll put you on it for free for a while and then we can see.
Throw out the hook, and once you have them, they never want to leave. Exactly. I see. I also want to talk about some obstacles or challenges along the way. Sure. You've come a long way. You mentioned, you know, from refugee camp to Switzerland, then to the US. Now you have your company even in the United States. If you look at United States versus Switzerland, what were the biggest challenges of moving there from Switzerland?
That's a good question. I mean, honestly, it was like for me, it was relatively smooth, I have to say. Like the immigration story from like outside of Switzerland, was a much more adventurous one than from Switzerland to the US. I mean, I was coming into the US like a tech executive of a hot startup, right? So it was relatively straightforward. Now, of course, there's always a little bit of sort of like the whole visa stuff and like all the admin bureaucracy stuff that everybody needs to go through. Other than that, culture-wise, I think I became a New Yorker relatively quickly. I think the vibe fits. Again, I'm a curious person, and like this pioneer spirit of the West is still alive, I would say, to some degree. So it offers a lot for somebody as hungry as me. Definitely different in terms of like relationship building, understanding, like learning the ropes, navigating the space. So hiring is different. Everything's much faster, different rules and so forth. So learning that, navigating that probably took me like a solid year. And then the challenges were always specific to whatever opportunity I was working on, right? Challenges of like landing there and expanding an existing business, a very different one than starting something from scratch with very impressive sort of people involved, and the pressures that come with that is again very poses very different challenges. Exploring a new market, building something that somehow makes sense to almost everybody that I'm speaking with, but yet it doesn't exist yet. And why doesn't it exist yet in this way? Why hasn't anybody solved this yet? So all of that, right? Just I think the challenges are similar for any person building something new.
Right. Are there things that you miss or that you think we do better here in Switzerland? It can be startup or entrepreneurship related, but doesn't have to be.
I mean, of course. I look back and see. There's pros, both pros and cons to to anything. But if you take a place like Switzerland, I mean, it's the closest thing to a perfect democracy that I have seen, at least, or witnessed right. so far, and have traveled a little bit. The education system is super strong. The healthcare system is super strong. Yet, if you're hungry and you want to do something, you still have some paths. That being said, I think one of the key differences, especially for now, like tech entrepreneurship, my sense, although I haven't spoken with too many sort of venture capitalists or entrepreneurs recently in Switzerland or Europe in general, but the vibe, well, how I remember it was more here, more often you have the conversation, what are all the ways in which this could go wrong, right? Mm-hmm. And then like sort of like think about the risks and think about like, okay, how is this evolving? Like very sort of thoughtful and so forth. Yeah. And in the US, very often you start the conversation with the other side will say, I already know all the ways in which this could go wrong, right? So let's talk about how this could go right, right? Mm-hmm. What happens if this becomes actually really big? Yeah. And it's much more, I mean, the outcome might still be the same, right? You might still partner with the same people, or you might have raised sure. the same money, or you might sort of land the same or a similar customer or make the same revenue. But the perspective is much more of a, if this goes right, how big can this get? I'm sure like everybody does both sides, mm-hmm. but the emphasis, I guess, in America is more the how big that can this get versus how low can you fall, right?
Right.
What is your experience in this?
I mean, I haven't worked myself in the US. We had a lot of US clients, which was always fun to work with.
Yeah.
But it is like this positive spirit. Yeah, let's make it work.
Mm.
And also much faster, and it's just a much bigger market. And I often feel like here in Switzerland, although we have the best prerequisites to build successful companies with the great talent, great education, fantastic standard of living, we sort of hit the ceiling when it comes to thinking big and being ambitious. And I think the US is a much better playground in that regard.
Yeah. Well put. Yeah.
So
yeah, that might be the case.
It's really exciting to see you, you know, starting your company in the US and experiencing that firsthand. And I think that is a really interesting environment to really put yourself out there. Yeah. It's probably way more competitive as well, you know, when it comes to hiring,
for sure, yeah.
when it comes to funding, etc. But it's so much bigger and it's really sky is the limit,
yeah.
which I think is just a different mindset here in Europe or particularly in Switzerland.
I think back to the challenge question, maybe that might be one of the challenges for mm-hmm. me, which is the leaving behind the more Swiss sort of ETH engineering mentality of, is it really ready? Is it really like this? The perfect is the enemy of done, right? Yeah. And I need to tell myself this every couple of hours, right? Yeah. If it's good enough, ship it. Use production as your sort of testing environment, right? That mentality is tricky, right? Because again, in Switzerland, every corner is exactly perfectly angled and clean.
Has to be perfect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So probably, and I grew up here, right? So a lot of that has been my culture as well. Right?
Yeah.
So now it's the clash of that level of perfectionism while at the same time having a little bit of that like Wild West, like, hey, let's get this done, let's get this out, and we'll iterate.
Yeah. You know, I always think about that, like you have to be able to build and you have to be able to sell. In mm-hmm. Switzerland, we focus more on building, way less on selling.
Yeah.
In the US, it's like the opposite. You still build, I think, in a better balance, but the focus really is on selling.
Yeah.
That's my impression.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and for Ren, I mean, I can absolutely make the case that we might have overbuilt. The advantage of it is we now have enterprise-grade software and we landed our first Fortune 500 customer in January. So I'm excited about that, which wouldn't have happened if you are not compliant and SOC 2 and all the data security and all that, like all the stuff that needs to be ready for landing a big client like that. But yeah, there's absolutely a case to be made where we could have gone out sooner, could have gone out faster.
No.
Now I'm happy about the curves having bent upwards and the infrastructure actually is still alive and the product seems to work.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's actually a great second topic I want to talk about, finding product market fit. That is one of the key things that you have to solve as a startup. How did you go about that at Ren? You said you over-engineered a bit at the beginning, you know, to really make it perfect before probably shipping and getting first customers on it. How did you go about finding product market fit?
It was definitely still iterative. And I guess, I mean, anybody who hasn't seen it, so there's a company and a tool that I use called Superhuman. And their founder, Rahul, he put something out, sort of like his framework for product market fit. Yeah. It's a very good starting point to just go through and just follow that. If you just copy and paste that, you're already sort of doing like at least your process will be good enough to get started in, on your journey to product market fit. Mm-hmm. Look, we iterate. I mean, even though when I say sort of we might have overbuilt, like from day one, we already started bringing on individual users. So we started trickling in 5 to 10 people from basically when it was pen and paper, and we wrote the stuff, like the first insights, right?
Yeah, sure.
I wrote myself as like the AI summary. I was the AI, right? back in 2020, I guess. So you need to iterate small and fast. That's everything. And then like always constantly talk to your users, talk to your customers, talk to customers, build product, talk to customers, build product. Yeah. The closer you draw this cycle of build, measure, learn, which is one of those classics, the smaller you draw it, the faster you iterate towards the right path. In terms of, for us, our main challenge wasn't that our TAM was too small. That was never the case. It was actually rather the opposite. The TAM was too big. Mm-hmm. Almost everybody that I spoke with, everybody that I showed the product with, and this still happens to this date, is I talked to someone in private equity. They're like, forget every industry. This is your industry. Trust me, you need to build for private equity. And then I go to real estate brokers. They're like, forget everything else. This is your So, and it repeats across all the industries, basically. So for us, it was really important to be very data-driven and metrics-driven and be very meticulous about our, not just on the product side analytics, but also on the sales process side analytics. Mm-hmm. Like see, okay, so let's see who is saying that this is the thing for them and where do the sales side, does their sales cycle reflect this? Where does the ACV reflect this? No. Where does the sort of speed and the need expressed and all of our lead qualification and so forth, where is that properly like reflected? And then focus on that, right? And this is what we've sort of really, really now picked up in the last few months.
So what is your focus segment then in that regard?
I still call them relationship-based sales professionals. And it turns out that the specific segments where we have the most traction is financial advisors, wealth management, mm-hmm. it's executive search, and it's commercial real estate. Now, that being said, in professional services like management consulting, everywhere where you have those, they tend to be senior, director and above. They tend to have larger deals. And most of their daily life, the way they operate is very much relationship based. No. That's our persona. So we have a very clear, crisp persona across now still a few segments, right? I don't know if we will get to the place where we will cut down all the segments and just have one segment. Just because the persona is so similar across the different segments. Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, you probably then also have to deal with multiple languages at one point, right? I mean, if you work with international corporations, they might operate in English, but maybe they have clients or partners in Latin America that speak Spanish, maybe in Europe where they speak German. Yeah. How do you handle that? That's probably another whole level of complexity into the product.
Yeah, and the answer is we don't. And the reason why we don't is right now our problem is not we don't have enough to do. Right now the problem is there's too much to do and there's a million different directions in which we could go. Yeah. And it's actually a conversation that I had with Mike recently. It's like we need to be very careful to not confuse traction with being pulled in 5 different directions.
Right.
So recognizing when is it actually on your core mission with your core value proposition and it's more demand for that versus this person was X, this company wants Y, and they're all flashy brands and very exciting people and very cool meetings and cool, it's fun to name drop, but staying laser focused. The English speaking market is big enough. Mm-hmm. It's not like we've dominated it already and we now need to move on to Spanish and Chinese. Yeah. So let's just focus on this. Let's really dominate this space and then we'll deal with the multi-language problem and so forth.
Yeah. Got it.
Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. But even within that space, I imagine you could still get pulled in quite complete directions, completely opposite directions.
Yeah, for sure.
How do you make sure that you stay on track? Because as you say, there are flashy brands, they have great requests, but you want to stay laser focused and really nail the very specific problem you're solving for exactly the right people. How do you make sure that you stay focused, stay on track, and don't make the wrong decisions when it comes to building that feature for this company, that feature for the other company? Because it sounds easy in theory, but in practice, it's brutally hard.
Yeah, it is. I don't have a general framework. Right. Well, the good thing is in business, it's good to go back to the basics, the fundamentals, right? a business has expenses and a business has revenues. And ideally, you want to bring in more than you spend. And that holds true for every government, every household, every company. So I don't know if it's too simplistic, but money talks, right? If you have a customer who's willing to pay you X amount, mm-hmm. and it's not a completely custom project that you cannot replicate and nobody else has asked for it, like those are some of the things that you want to look for, right?
Right.
How much are they actually willing to pay for the thing that exists today mm-hmm. versus how much are they sort of pulling you in a direction where they want you to build something just for them? Yeah. That might be great, actually, if it's like a package of like, hey, here's the core product, but also can it like, have you thought about this feature? This would be super interesting for us. Like, we are using this CRM. Can you integrate with that, right? Sure. If this is the first time I've heard of the CRM and I'm thinking, well, nobody else is using it because everybody else is on Salesforce, yeah. I might sort of find other ways to help them and sort of work more with file exports or whatever. I don't want to get too detailed here. It's going to be boring. But if somebody asks for something that sounds custom, easy. I just go to 100 more people and see if how many of them are asking for the same thing or are using the same technology. Yeah. And from there, I can see, okay, there might be something here, actually. Let's sell it first before we start building it.
I like that. I think it was Mark Cuban who said, sales cures it all. Once you make the revenue,
yeah,
you know,
that's
whatever,
painfully true.
It's like, yeah, that's yeah. how you run the business.
Yeah, that's yeah. painfully true. Yeah, exactly. Before customers and after customers is a very different world.
Absolutely. And you mentioned you have some pretty big customers these days, right? Like public companies or huge companies of the S&P 500, etc. How do you acquire them? How does that sales process look like, etc.? How do you convince them to use you as a rather small company, your product, basically?
Yeah, I guess that was also one of the unique things that attracted me to actually starting this with this group of people, right? It was the virality or the network effects were already built in just based off of the people who are going to use it, like as the beta users, so to speak. I have never seen or heard anyone having built a beta product and a Fortune 500 CEO was using it and giving feedback as a beta user. And that was the case with us, right? So we very quickly learned how we need to build it for some of the most demanding, busiest humans on the planet. Mm-hmm. And then once they like it, those people also tend to recommend it and spread the word. Right? Mm-hmm. And then once they say it, because of who they are, people want to be like them. And they get on it and they're like, wow, if he's using it, then I have to, and so forth, right? Right. And that's how we landed most of our customers, if not all, actually. They just started using the product at first, fell in love with it, spread it both internally inside of their teams and outside. Mm-hmm. Whenever we hit a threshold that's big enough inside of a group that's sort of relative to total employee number, right. We go in and we seek the conversation. Hey, we could give you a demo. We can actually show you how to get more value from the product. Mm-hmm. That is the conversation starter. Then the whole lead qualification starts, the sales process starts.
Right.
And at some point we have such a big number. Like we currently have companies where we have several hundred users inside the company pre-sale.
That's crazy.
And the sale at that point is a very different conversation than trying to bring something in that's brand new, nobody's heard of it and so forth. So the pitches tend to go, I join. Some of the champions that are already on the platform also join. I start the pitch, but they finish the pitch internally. In the room, they will start pitching their own company. And that's just a beautiful thing to witness.
Yeah.
So that's how we sell to larger companies.
It also really proves how you bring value to the company, right? If so many different people are using it. Yeah. This reminds me a bit how Slack, I think, started their sales. Hmm. You know, first people within the organization using it and then moving up and scoring the bigger deals.
Yeah. I read everything I can get my hands on around how Slack started and how all of these PLG, product-led growth companies started. I religiously read the OpenView sort of newsletter. They're sort of pretty big in content around PLG. So at least like right now, we're actually not selling in the PLG motion. We're B2B sales, but many of the I would call it sort of a hybrid in our case. Many of the fundamentals of PLG are absolutely built into Ren, and that's how we, at the very least, market Ren. And maybe, you know, once we have the individual subscription and once all that is automated, it could turn into that sort of PLG flywheel thing. But I like selling. I like going and talking to companies and selling.
So, that's how you learn.
Yeah.
100%.
Exactly.
So everyone from senior leaders at places like NASA, PwC, etc. are using Ren. What are your plans for the future? Like just the few months ahead of us in 2023 and early 2024?
Yeah, look, I mean, we're still an early stage company, so our goals are very typical early stage company goals, right? So ramp up ARR fast, further narrow down the ICP, further solidify product market fit. There's still a ton of stuff we learn from already existing customers, right? Mm-hmm. And then we both want to land new logos, which I'm excited about. There's a few companies, incredible companies that we work with and existing customers who we have pretty massive expansion potential. So I think proving both that we can win someone and once we won them, we can expand. Right. I think that'll be a pretty good signal to send. At that point, hopefully we'll be in a solid enough space where we can really pour some gas on this fire, because it looks like we're onto something here. So I'm pretty excited about that portion. I've never done sort of like that sort of crazy hyper growth part of something, right? I don't know if, I mean, we'll have to see, right? We still have a lot to prove. But again, curiosity is my main driver, so I'm curious about that phase.
I like that. And do you also plan to take on any investor money, any funds to then scale the company?
It's possible. I mean, we have some funds who are already customers, which are some of the big brand names. Curious to see how they view it from an investor lens. At some point, yes, institutional money, I guess, will be part of the journey. Mm-hmm. Right. So far, we've brought in just hyper experienced operators, individual investors, and so forth, all of them with built-in network effects. And that's been great for the early stages. So the funding plan will be very much metrics driven and metrics dependent. So we're right now building those metrics.
Makes sense. And what is your long-term goal or plan? Do you say, hey, this is the company that will be profitable and I just want to ride that for 10, 20 years? You want to sell the company one day, or maybe even say, hey, I'm really ambitious. I want to learn and I'm super curious about doing an IPO one day. What are your ambitions with the companies?
Yeah, look, I mean, I wish I knew, right? I don't. I am at the moment pretty obsessed with this idea of systematizing serendipity. I think that would be a pretty cool claim if we got anywhere near that, right? I mean, the way I like to think about it is if we make humanity like 0.5% luckier, what is the value in dollars for this, right? I don't know what measure you would take for this, but sure. I mean, for me, a random email to a buddy of mine led to me becoming CEO at Ren, right? If you think of this, like if I could systematize that, whatever that is, right? That kind of serendipity, what would I run, right? If I had a tool that would systematize this kind of events for me, right? Where would I be? And if you ask that question for our entire market, our entire user base, there will be at some point a book or some podcast around all the magic that happened because of Ren. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited to see that or maybe be part of that. I know Mike is excited to at some point write that second book of his, or maybe this third, fourth, fifth. So that is my core focus right now. And that's the mission. Mm-hmm. I want to make this mission work. And what format that mission gets to work, I don't really care about.
No. I like that. Super exciting times ahead of you.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm curious.
So to wrap up the conversation, we also prepared some rapid fire questions for you. Right. So I give you different options to choose from or a quick question, and you have to answer in one sentence, ideally.
I'll try.
Let's see. Let's go. What's the worst cold email you've ever received?
Can it be a LinkedIn message?
Can be, of course.
It was funny. This guy, I think I remembered something along the lines of, hey, we both like water and we're both in crypto. We should connect. So it was like, and my response to him was, for the next time, if you want a better reason to reach out, you might want to try Ren.
Yeah.
So it was that. Yeah. Like both like hit, like the way he or his marketing team is like understood what I do. Plus like this opening line, it made me laugh. So maybe it's not the worst one, but it was like the most memorable one.
Yeah. And what was the best one you ever received?
That's a good question. The best cold email. Somebody trying to sell me something or just any sort of...
It could be any outreach. Maybe they wanted to sell you something. Maybe they just wanted to, you know, reach out and get connected. It could be anything.
Yeah. The best cold email that I received, not sent. Yeah. The one that I sent was the one to Matt who introduced me to Mike.
Fair.
I don't have a specific one, but I mean, just every time I see something where the first sentence... No. speaks exactly to the problem that I'm thinking about today, which has happened magically.
Yeah.
They must be using some sort of tool. But yeah, just like hit the nail on the head. And every time I'm very close to considering replying, but then most of the time I still don't.
Then life gets in the way.
Exactly. The day only has so many hours.
Absolutely. If you have to choose researcher or entrepreneur.
For me, who I am?
For you.
My answer is that's tough to choose. I mean, at this point, probably entrepreneur, but I'm a very researchy kind of, I'm a researcher. I don't know if researcher means just buy the book and academic, then definitely not.
Right.
If it means just curious to the death and just exploring everything, maybe more of that, but probably entrepreneur.
Research based entrepreneur.
Maybe.
Are you more of a morning person or a night owl?
Morning person. Yeah. Morning person.
And if you had to choose United States or Switzerland?
What for?
Well, you choose.
It highly depends.
Maybe one is better for the specific thing. So
that would be a very long answer. I don't think I have. I have nothing but gratitude and I'm very grateful for everything in Switzerland. It was the place that welcomed my family. It was the place that, of course it wasn't easy. It wasn't, as a refugee immigrant, you don't have the smoothest journey, I guess. For me, it was maybe smoother than for my parents, but like not speaking the language and, Switzerland back then was way more homogenous. It was probably more closed off. And a lot of that has changed, thankfully, but I'm very grateful that we got that chance. I was able to grow up and get an education, go to ETH, meet incredible people. Like all of that is very much. So I have nothing but gratitude for Switzerland. On the other hand, same thing with the United States, right? If I think like, what are the chances that I will bump into Mike and Frank and the Zames brothers? That just doesn't happen here, right? And for that, you gotta go somewhere big. You gotta go where these people are. So I'm also grateful for that. I'm grateful for the people that I met along the journey. It's really both. The answer is both. I love both for different reasons.
Yeah. Absolutely. Chennai, that's a wrap. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a pleasure talking to you. Lots of success and all the best with Ren and whatever you'll be tackling in the future.
Thank you. You as well.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, you can support us by rating our show on Apple Podcasts. This way, we can reach an ever-growing number of aspiring entrepreneurs.